Hi, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of CISO Talks. With us today is Brent Turning, who has held many, many positions, he's told me, in through IT, and is now currently enjoying a role of, I believe, CISO now, isn't it, Brent, that you you're doing? And hopefully what we'll do today is have a really good conversation regarding the role of the CISO, understanding a few more in terms of how your feelings and what you think about, and get some really good conversation going. So really great to have you here, and I look forward to this.
Sounds good. I look forward to it.
Excellent.
Quick comments about Magic Mind. I was really quite cynical about their pitch regarding that you would find that your life would suddenly become calmer and you would be able to focus for longer and so on. And really, like I said, I was cynical about that. And so, but I thought with an open mind, I'll give it a try. And I've been using it now for around about 7 days. And to be honest with you, I am surprised, because I am finding that my mind isn't racing as much, and it normally does. I've got a young family at home, and trying to keep everything in tow, especially with a sales job, it gets quite stressful. And what I've found is that I've been a bit more able to cope with that. And really, like from the beginning, it really does seem to be making a difference. I'm going to keep going with it and just see how everything goes. If you do want to give it a try, please click the link in the description and use the code CISOTALKS20, and that will give you a discount.
Excellent. So really, just to start us off really quite easily, is like CISO is obviously a real time-heavy role. Everybody talks about how stressful it is, but what I want to do is take another path to that and say, well, what do you think are the most enjoyable parts of being a CISO?
So, I love it. I love everything about being a CISO. I think a lot more people should do it. That said, the stress is not a burden to me, and my satisfaction is through the roof. And I think that there's a couple main reasons why that is. One reason is that in my kind of previous life, I worked for a vendor for 19 years. 15 years in operations, 4 years in like a global sales overlay role. And back in the early 2000s, ransomware wasn't a thing, but managing firewalls was. Mm-hmm. And so we managed, you know, thousands of firewalls and hundreds of client environments and all this stuff. And occasionally you would talk to someone who was having the worst day of their year, if not their career, because of a firewall issue or maybe a breach or whatever else. And so I got used to talking to people who were very stressed and very upset, and it turned me into a pretty good incident commander. But what that also did is it allowed me to segment off, like, things I don't control are not going to cause me stress and anxiety. And that is an incredibly useful skill as a CISO, because the likelihood of some jackass in China ruining my year is zero. Right? Doesn't mean we can't be tech, doesn't mean we can't be bridge, doesn't mean whatever. But like, that's not going to ruin my life, right? I mean, it might ruin some evenings, it might take some hours, okay, fine. But like, fundamental who I am as a person is not going to be impacted by that.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that I align what I personally need for satisfaction in life and what professionally makes me good at my job, right? And I think that a lot of CISOs don't do that well. So when you go to a room full of CISOs and you say, hey, how many of us are recovering engineers? Everyone goes, everyone's smart, because it's true. Now, I spent 20 years with lead in my title. I was one of the biggest technical kumbas around, right? That's not me. I'm not technical any longer. And I hesitate saying that. So it's weird. Like, if I say that, I mean that, like, that's not part of my identity any longer. And therefore, I'm able to align with professionally what makes me good and gives me satisfaction. And personally, what gives me satisfaction are the same thing. I can talk to technical people, it's fine. I can manage, I can lead them, I can do all that. But I had to lay that part of my identity down, right? And some people are unwilling to do that. I personally was. It was not a big deal. I said, that's not who I am anymore. And yep. I think where we get incongruence for CISOs is when they say, okay, I can either do the things that make me personally satisfied, the techie stuff, or I can do the things that make me satisfied at work. But those are two different things. And yeah, yeah. I think that incongruity leads to dissatisfaction and burnout and things like that. I align the two so that I'm good. And I think that that's a choice that I made. And I think that it's a useful one to make. So,
yeah, absolutely. No, it definitely sounds that. I suppose that leads on to what the next one in terms of. So, like, would you agree then that the experience of different roles, like whether that be technical, whether it be strategic, is essential really to becoming a CISO, and as opposed to someone going, I want to be a CISO and becoming a CISO overnight?
Oh, yeah. I think, so again, two things. One, I think coming from the vendor side, is vendor consulting, whatever, is extremely beneficial because you have exposure to, call it 100 or more environments per year, right?
Yeah.
So you get this incredible instinct of what is possible and what good looks like and what bad looks like. You get exposure to a ton of different people and personalities and all of that. And that, you don't realize what a benefit it is until you work in like one environment for a while and you're like, oh man, like, I have a lot of insight, and that insight is super valuable. Yeah. So that is one thing that really, really helps. The other thing that I think is extremely beneficial is having a sales role in your background, because sales boils down to empathy and people respond to their incentives. And if you are used to figuring out how to sell something, then if you're good, you're working those skills, empathy, and people respond to them. Guess what I do as a CISO?
Yeah.
I ask some people, and I understand what their incentives are, not to sell them, but to work with them better, to form a relationship, right? So on sales, I was all about creating rapport, credibility, helping, serving, enabling, all that. Guess what I do as a CISO?
Same. Yeah.
Exactly. And in sales, you can just try it all the time. Like, you get a lot of at bats, right? Mm. And as a CISO, it's like, I need, like, you don't get a brand new VP of client services every week, right? Or day, right? Like, you have a couple people. And so you, like, the having a ton of at bats earlier in your career is incredibly beneficial. Because then when you have to kind of do it in just one environment, you have a lot of experience. And it's fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, it makes sense that in terms of, like you said, with the, being a sales like myself, it is like that empathy side of things and understanding people. Like you said, if you've got just a one person that you've got to work with, whether like you get on with them or not, but you've got to make it work. I think it's essential that you know how to work with different people at different times there. To ensure that it's like a smooth fit. I mean, that's obviously there's quite a few personality traits there. I mean, traditionally what people would say is that like a CISO is it's the techie side and that's all it was. But I think that has now, it's definitely evolved and is continually evolving as the threat landscapes get wider and more deep. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Like, in terms of, obviously, it used to be almost two separate roles, didn't it? That you almost needed a CISO that sat behind and did the tech stuff, and then a CISO who sat there and did the strategic side and talked to the board and the executives.
Yeah,
but that's now almost combined, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it is. And I'm trying to change my language a little bit because I used to say I'm not technical.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it's not true. Like, I am. It's just not part of my identity, right? Mm-hmm. So I can lead and develop technical people. That's fine, right? But what, like, CISOs is a bit broad group. We don't lack for our technical acumen or technical understanding. Like, that's not a limiting factor. Our limiting factor is in soft skills, is in leadership, it's in all of this stuff. Uh-huh. And I think for us to, like, you're not allowed to go to a CISO event and not say, we must speak the language of the business. Like, if you don't say it, they kick your butt out, right? But how that looks is, like, we don't know exactly how that looks. And I have things that, like, I think it's not all about numbers and dollars. I think it's breaking things down to very simple terms. So when I posted a video about this last week or so, where I said, hey, liability without functionality is unwise, right? I can say that to anyone. I can say that to my CFO, my CEO, my COO, my anyone. They get it. They're all, yeah, yeah, it makes sense. I'm like, so we have an unknown amount or potentially large amount of liability to the company out here with this, and it's providing very little to zero business value. So I want to eliminate that. Cool? Thank you. Yeah. I didn't talk about email retention policies. I didn't talk about what attack service production. Now, those are the projects. But speaking the language of the business was liability without functionality is unwise. Done.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that, but you know where I got that is I got that from sales. I got that because I need to take a large technical concept that a lot of people think they know about or that they don't know about, and I'm going to break it down into a very simple, punchy kind of soundbite almost, right?
Yeah.
That people go, oh, and makes them think. And that gets me credibility. That gets me trust. And that builds rapport. And that builds relationship. And all of those things that happen because of my sales background to take email retention policy and apply it to language of the business, right? Yeah. And I do think that that is key for CISOs to be able to do.
Yeah.
I run across a lot of CISOs who can do that well, and I also run across a lot of CISOs who really, really want to maintain their technical chops, and they want to maintain that personal identity. And I'm not mad about it. That's fine. There's different types of CISOs, and we need all of them. And we need all of them to be good. That's fine. But I would challenge people to get into the role that matches their desire and get into the organization that needs their type CISO, right? So yeah. I can tell you that there are environments that I would be very well suited for, and there are environments that I would not be well suited for, and I don't care what the money is. I'm not going to go to an environment in which I would be miserable and ineffective.
Yeah.
It's not good for them. It's not good for me. Like,
no.
No, I know what I need. I know what I want. I don't need to go put square pegs in round holes. That's fine.
Absolutely. Well, it makes logical sense, doesn't it? That's the, like, essentially that, like you said, that work life and almost the balance of making sure that the happiness comes from both parts of your life as opposed to just, like, focusing on one and just going, oh, well, the work's not, that's never going to be happy, but.
I would love a post-breach role. I would love it. That's my wheelhouse.
Excellent, the stuff. I love
where I am. I love the job, all that. But like, yeah. you want gets me like. I'm very proud that we do not have any major incidents nor any risk of major incidents. I'm really, really happy about that. I did my job well. But like, I get fired up on incident commander, rip it down to the studs, rebuild it.
Absolutely.
Can't do that, man.
You don't want to tempt that fate, though, do you?
Well, so here's the thing. Look at like Clorox, right? Clorox and Bridge, CISO left. They're getting, and people are like, oh, I don't want that role with a 10-foot pole. I was like, man, I knew that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be I mean, look at Equifax, Jamil, after came in for Equifax, like, he had a $1.3 billion budget or something. I was like, come on, Al. If you can't get it done for $1.3 billion, then come on.
Absolutely. Like,
that would be fun. I would love that. That'd be great. I'm not saying it'd be easy, but like it would tick my personality boxes. Like it would scratch that itch.
Yeah. No doubt. So I mean, with that, like the shakeup and the idea and stuff like that, do you think, obviously, the role of a CISO is, generally they say the life of a CISO in a company is quite short.
Yeah.
It's quite short-lived at times. But do you think then that when they go new to a role, that they need to shake things up? They need to build, like, to get a solid foundation of a company? Is it more of a tweak to transform type scenario that you think would probably be more beneficial?
So they absolutely need to decide what type of CISO they need.
Mm-hmm.
And job roles are hysterical to me. We have a severe matching problem because people don't know what they don't know. So example, you have a healthcare organization gets breached. Okay. And you see a JD for a CISO and they're like, okay, we want a CISO with 10 years of experience in a 10,000 or greater size healthcare organization. And you're like, really? Is that really what you think you need? Oh, yeah, we need someone who's been there, done that. And you're like, guess what? No, you don't. You need a post-breach CISO. You need a builder CISO. Or you have an environment that is heavily, has a lot of friction in the environment on basic things like MFA. So you need an executive who can sell the idea and sell the things. And that CISO also needs to be complemented by a hardcore compliance person because you're in a heavily regulated environment. So you need to think about the CISO and their team and what they need for success. But saying, oh yeah, we need a CISO with 10 years of experience. Well, you know what? Maybe that CISO with 10 years of healthcare experience only never experienced a breach and is only experienced dealing with regulators. And they're going to come in and all they're going to focus on is compliance. And when what you need is you need a hardcore executive to come in and convince you all, like, hey guys, guess what? Strong in favor, 100% of users works really, really well. Let's do that and sell that and get that done. But when you ask for, there's this matching problem, right? You don't need, and you take, take a CISO with a background in big, huge companies, right? And put them with a small SaaS provider. I don't know about that. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But like the type of CISO they are, the type of organization that they can succeed at and how they operate, that's the critical thing. And when I look at job descriptions, they're going like this. And I found that when I was looking for my company, I was looking for the right culture fit. I was looking for an environment in which I could succeed. And what I found, and I wasn't looking at Fortune 500 kind of roles, is that a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, we want a strategic executive, but you need to push the buttons. So I'm like, no. Oh, you're asking for a hardcore technical individual contributor CISO kind of person that you're going to give the CISO title to, but you're giving lip service to all the other stuff. So, no, I mean, and I'm not mad about it. Just that's not me. So that's incumbent upon companies to know what the hell they want, but it's also incumbent on CISOs, I think, to like set yourself up for success. If you go somewhere that is not matching, the culture isn't matching, your type isn't matching, all that, you're not going to be happy. Go figure. Yeah. And you're going to churn.
Yeah.
Right? And for that matter, things like who the team is, like who will I be interacting with on a regular basis? And that matters because, again, because of my sales background and my vendor background, I can smell toxic. Like toxic environments put off an odor that you can smell through the team. Right? And if I smell a toxic environment, I don't want to work. Right? But if you had five environments in your background, that's one thing. If you've had 500, you have a little bit more. of an instinct about that stuff, right?
Absolutely. I suppose that, I mean, experience then teaches you that, it teaches you that, doesn't it? Like how to pick and choose and get a good match for yourself as well. And it makes as much sense for the company itself, like to have somebody who matches them, as opposed to just picking somebody, like you said, somebody with 10 years experience, just because it looks good on paper. Yeah. Actually doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work.
And they're, you know, companies have done, oh, well, they had to have a background in government, law enforcement, FBI, whatever. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
That doesn't apply any special abilities. Come on.
Man.
But whatever. And that's why I like it when I think that companies are well served, especially at the CISO level. I think companies are very well served by using exec recruiters who can help them determine, like, what do you need? If you're asking for a job and then you lay down what you think, and it's like, okay, well, you're asking for a CISO, but what you just outlined is neither a C nor an O. So just saying, maybe you don't need a CISO.
Absolutely. I mean, I do think that, like, the change of perspective or another way to look at things is often refreshing and can give an answer that they would never have thought of in the first place.
Right.
It's come from something that they're not used to. You know, and I've seen that in my careers of different, having been a teacher and things like that. Like, just have somebody look at it from a different point of view can sometimes open up a huge door and window to be able to make change and actually succeed very quickly.
Yeah.
As well.
And I really do think that CISO is the newest kind of C-level title. Right? A lot of companies just don't know what they don't know, right? I'm not mad at anyone, right? I think they just don't know what they really need because they don't know what is really possible.
Yeah.
And when all they've seen is a fairly typical background environment, then they just don't know what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a rapidly changing environment, like marketplace as well, and the way things are going. That makes complete sense. And I think you find that with companies, like what we're seeing now is that more and more companies are trying to decentralize to give themselves that competitive side and that competitive edge. But the cybersecurity strategy essentially is encouraging and championing centralization. So yeah. It's almost like working against each other. So, I mean, with that in mind, do you think that it is vitally important for a CISO to have a member of the C-suite from a strategic map-like point of view to collaborate with and almost provide context from that strategic vantage point?
So it is critical for the CISO to be very, very tied in with the company's strategy as it exists, right? So, and here's what I say, or why I say that. The first day I was the CISO, I went to lunch. We're a privately held company. I went to lunch with the CEO, the owner of the company. I was like, hey, what are we doing here? Like, are we building this to do M&A? Are we trying to get funding? Are we trying to sell it? Or like, what are we doing? Because my roadmap is heavily dependent on that, right?
Uh-huh.
Where are we going? What are we doing? That matters a lot. For example, if anyone says even one word of having operations for clients in Europe or federal government or whatever, like, blah, or wants to go public, like, for God's sakes, like, there'd be dragons. Now, I can navigate us through those challenges, but like, we got to talk about this, right? And we're going to do a bunch of M&A. There'll be dragons there, right? So we have. So I need to be very tied in with the company's strategy. Doesn't mean I have to be like, oh, yes, no, yeah. But I need to be tied in, right, to that, because that determines the roadmap. I can't protect a company that I don't know where we're going, right? And that's, so yes, it's critical. Now, does that mean that I have to be tied in with a C-suite, a border, maybe. That's going to be very dependent on the organization. Like, can a CISO be successful at reporting to the CIO? Yes, absolutely. Can they be successful reporting to the CEO? Yes, absolutely. is either one of those required? No, but it kind of depends on the person. If their CIO is a toxic mess, then you don't want to report to them. But it's not because of the role, it's because they're a toxic mess.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
If people's incentives are, if it's a toxic environment, they're going to marginalize you no matter who you are, then leave. I say it flippantly, but like,
yeah,
I view that as an interview stage thing. Like, can I succeed at this company? And can I succeed is, what do they want? What do I bring? Toxic, not toxic, culture, all that kind of stuff. But yes, it is absolutely critical that the CISO is tied into the company's strategy. Now, to what degree, at what point, how is that? That's going to depend on every environment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But no, thank you. I sometimes think that there is, like, it gets pigeonholed what needs to be done in order to be. So you need to do this to be a CISO. You need to have this person on your side to be a CISO. And like the way you're putting it is actually, no, you don't. You just need to make sure that you're working with the right people in the right, and you're all facing the right direction. And actually, you can make it work. And
prime example, right? I have regular one-on-ones with a lot of people internal to my company, right? That's fine. No one has ever had any issue with that, right? If you're in an environment where it's like, no, you are not allowed to talk to that person without going through me.
Yeah.
I view that as toxic.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to be able to, now I have to also be a, like, understand my swim lane and understand my role and understand who I report to and what that affords me or not. But just talking to someone, like having a standing meeting, like, if you're banned from that, I think that's toxic. And that happens, right? But
that's always
well in that environment.
I was going to say, that's always going to limit your abilities. If you've got, like, because even just getting somebody else's point of view on it can be, doesn't matter who they are. You could have somebody like working literally on the decks, and you can get an opinion on that and actually think, oh, you know what? I've not thought about that. I always think that's a great, I think it's a real benefit to people as opposed to like locking them off. Like you said, like.
So I came in hot and heavy saying, I enable our business. Here are the four ways that I enable our business, right? And I went around to every group and I said, hi, I'm Brent. I'm the CISO. Enable the business. Right. I had been a CISO like 3 weeks and I had a director, an HR director call me and was like, hey, I hear you're the yes, how guy. And I got a problem. And I was like, touchdown. Like, that's victory. If you've been there 3 weeks and someone from another area of the business, not even IT, is calling you saying, I hear you're the yes, how guy, and I have a problem, and I think you're the answer.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it. I was so happy. took me a while to get the thing done, but we got it done. So
that's excellent. So moving, like, I'm going to shift it over to something slightly different in terms of, I know when we initially talked, we talked about like vulnerability management, and you had like the way it is in the world today and like the state of it. So like, what's your opinion on the way it sits at the moment? Is it like, do you see like big changes coming? Is it changing all the time? What's your feelings?
So this can always, you can always get into it here, right? Because I said something one time on a stage and I had 40, 50 CISOs laugh at me, like audibly laugh. Because I was talking about vulnerability management and they were talking about, I have 700,000 vulnerabilities and how do I prioritize? And I was like, listen, if I give you four things to alphabetize, you just go, done. If I give you 4,000, you need a system. I get it. It's an Elon Musk quote that the biggest mistake smart engineers make is optimizing a process that should not exist. So I look at vulnerability management and I say, automatically patch. And that's what everyone laughed at me for. And I said, oh, okay. And someone was being a little snarky, and they were like, how many hundreds of endpoints are in your environment? And I was like, 12,000? Like, what? I'm like, we have the technology. And so many things in cybersecurity are not technology problems, and they're not finance problems. We own the technology. We've already bought it. It's not a matter of that. It is a people process problem, right? Which we might say is a leadership problem, right? So do we have the technology to automatically patch 95% of things? Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
And then people might say, oh, well, what about legacy stuff? I'm like, legacy stuff is a people process leadership problem. Now, isn't it? I don't have legacy stuff. Why don't you have legacy stuff? Well, I went to the CIO and I said, hey, this is dumb. Let's not do it. And we don't do it. Now, it's a little bit simplified, but I mean, essentially, that's a leadership. Now, are some environments more difficult than others? Absolutely. And that's why someone said, oh, how many hundreds of endpoints? Because you can do more in a 100 endpoint environment than you can in a 10,000 endpoint environment. I get it. But even in large environments, we can still do things like eliminate tech debt and eliminate legacy applications. And we can still optimize, we can still sidestep entire processes and make our lives dramatically easier, right? Mm-hmm. So when we do these things, we simplify the problem, right? And cybersecurity as a whole is a large enough thing that anytime I can simplify it, it's better. Right. Yep. So when I can simplify the problem, I'm all about that. Right. And some things take longer than others, and some things don't take long at all. And, you know, like, example, tech debt reduction in AD. I don't know about y'all, but like, we've had a domain for a really, really long time. It's going to take a little bit to eliminate tech debt in that system and that domain and that whatever. Okay. So you kind of approach it. You're like, all right, so first we're going to get visibility to the problem. Then we are going to quickly stop the bleeding. And then we're going to make progress over time. I don't care necessarily what the deadline is. I care that we make progress over time if you stop the bleeding. And then you can identify, like, I know what the problem is. I made sure it's not a problem going forward, and I'm fixing it over time. And I'm doing so by partnering with these other aspects of the business, be it IT or engineering or HR or whoever, right? Sorry. And you do that, it works. It works. You build trust, you build rapport, you build credibility. And I mean, it's a systemic approach that makes it easier. Like, the longer you do it, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
And again, some environments are going to be really, really hard for that. Some environments are not going to be as difficult.
Yeah.
But as a leader, you have a great amount of influence over how difficult that problem is.
Absolutely. I suppose it's like it's like the triage side of it, like you said, to stop the bleeding. And then it's that managing the expectation of how long something may take. We often find that with when we're like setting up a project or anything like that, is managing the expectation that you may want it done in a week, but this is going to take months. And as long as people know at the beginning it's going to take that long, that once you've managed that expectation, then the actual process does get simpler as well, I think.
Right. And, you know, I'm all about setting expectations, right? And so I've been asked questions about GenAI and identity sprawl and all this kind of stuff. And when I would start, I'm like, all right, let's level set right away that dumpster fires are dumpster fires. And no matter what you do, there's not a magic button to push. Like, there is no easy button on this. On some problems, there's an easy button. Some problems, there's not an easy button. And some things are really hard. Now, where it gets complicated is when the dumpster fire was on someone's watch, and then for them to admit that it is a dumpster fire that they helped create, that's very personally challenging, that's hard. And if you point that out, you're calling their baby awkward, right? Whether you like, because as humans, we're very defensive of our messes. Like, yeah, I know my diaper is full of poop, but it's warm and it's mine, right? Yeah. I mean, people get very defensive of their messes. So, but there again, that's where the sales background comes in so freaking valuable, right? Because then you can look and you can massage and it's a whole thing, right? But some problems are going to be hard, but you can make them easier and you can make them more difficult. And depending on your approach, like some things are complete non-starters in some environments because the well has been poisoned because someone didn't approach it very well.
Yeah.
Right. And that's going to be hard. No matter what it is, it's going to be hard. But again, this is very rarely a technology or a money problem.
Yeah.
Very rarely. Like, we have the tools that we need. We own them. We have them. We can buy them. We can do whatever. That's not the hard part. The hard part is the people process leadership aspect.
Yeah.
And we can impact that because we can change.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I think, like, people looking for sometimes look for an easy route or they want to make their life easier. And I suppose that leads us on to, like, it's the huge elephant in the room, really, isn't it, with in terms of AI. And, like, do you see that, like, is AI the only way forward for us now? Or is there other ways that we can, bring in other technologies that are going to be equally as successful?
I'm tired of talking about AI. I've been talking about I had talked about AI just plenty before 2023, right? I mean, so I've been talking about AI for a long time. AI has made my coffee for at least 8 years, all right? Very often, the conversation around AI boils down to fight fire with fire, right? My AI is better than your AI. Bad guys are using AI, so we can use it. We can enable the business by using AI. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. That's all fine. I'm not saying any of those are wrong or bad conversations. I look at it from a very narrow perspective that is cybersecurity, right? Yeah. I mean, there's like the worldwide societal, there's my company, there's enabling it. But from just the cybersecurity blinder perspective, I'm going to say that we can fight fire with water. That works, right? Which is kind of what I was talking about. Like, if I can do this, I avoid a lot of problems. For example, if I have the leadership ability to get to 100% strong MFA, every single employee has strong MFA, do I care about super duper AI generated phishing emails? Not really.
Yeah.
Right. So I sidestep that problem. Right. I sidestep the fire with fire. My AI is better than your AI. Say, hey, if I do that, and I also say that every machine to do anything has to be my domain joined machine. Did I cut down my overall company risk from cyber dramatically? If I do that, if phishing isn't a worry, if bad guys on the network is unlikely unless they're physically there, how many alerts do you think we have? How much alert fatigue do you think we have? Oh, not much. Okay. Well, then can we take those resources and figure out how to enable the business with doing kind of positive AI over here?
Yeah.
Probably, right? Do I need to spend money on, it kind of like vulnerability management? If I have 700,000 vulnerabilities and I need to prioritize and do them, that's a big problem. I need a lot of stuff, right? If I have all these alerts, might I need Gen AI? Might I need scripting, automation, AI, whatever to help handle all that? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
If I don't have any of that, I don't need it. Do I need to go to the board or the CFO and be like, I need budget for AI to do this and it's going to cost $100,000 or $400,000 or however many thousands of dollars? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Can we then take that money and apply it to developing our own large language model to help serve our clients better? Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
So I enable the business, I enable our business in four ways, right? Cost avoidance, check. Increased efficiency, check. Increased revenue, really five ways. Higher client satisfaction and ensuring compliance. Cool.
Yeah.
So if any of those, like, I think it's for using AI in a way to enable our business, but it's also being able to not use it in cases so that we can go do something else. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's, AI is the thing. It's hard. It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's that the buzzword that always just keeps coming back, isn't it? It doesn't seem to ever go away. But it's really interesting the way you say that, like, using it, like, when you need it, and actually when you don't, there's no point just using it just for the sake of it. It's
excellent.
And you'll also get the lazy. It is laziness as well. I think with some is that they just use it for everything to see if they can get away with what you can get away with.
But fundamentally, right, there are times where technology is a fantastic solution for a people problem, right? People collecting like phishing emails is a people problem. Whether
absolutely.
Whether they should or should not, or whether we should, different story, right? YubiKeys is a technology that does a damn fine job of addressing that people problem. I'm good.
Yeah.
Technology is not always the answer to a people problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You have legacy OSs, you have legacy junk around. Maybe yeah. that's a need for technology. Maybe that's a need for leadership, right? So it, like, I feel like it, as human beings, as people in this world, we have a tendency to throw technology at things that may or may not necessarily be the right approach or the most efficient approach, right?
Yeah.
So I think always stepping back and being like, what problem is this? What problem am I solving? And what is the best way to solve it? Because AI may be a fantastic solution. It may be a really bad solution, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need crazy AI to say that Memecats is bad on a machine. Like, you see that? It's bad. You don't need to think about it. You don't need any analysis. You don't need any crazy AI. It's just bad, right? Yeah. You go into an environment, they have no MFA. You don't need to analyze it. You don't need this assessment. You don't need to talk about it. You don't need to do a business case. You just go, that's a dumpster fire. Let's go fix that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like it, and it's when you say it sounds so simple, but I think people don't always look for the most simple way now. They look for something that's going to be with all bells and whistles and it's going to get everything sorted for them and make them look great. And actually, the simpler option is what will make you look even better.
I compare this to, home automation is really kind of cool. Like I think it's just neat. Okay. I have very, very little, right? It's cool, but I looked into it and I was like, all right, so that is awesome, but that looks like a good way for me to spend $750 or more to avoid flipping light switch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's cool, and if it's your hobby, okay, fine. But when you say that three times out loud, you're kind of like, maybe you should drop a little bit more money in a college savings plan or a 401k or something. Like, yeah, I don't know about that one, right? Which is all too often what we do. I call up my, like, don't buy a $10 solution to a $5 problem.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that it's not a $50 problem somewhere else, but it's my $5 problem, right? And that's kind of sort of gut feel a little bit, right? I'll give you an example. IT brought up a product, a vendor the other day. I looked at it. We looked at it. Everyone looked at it. It's cool. It's an elegant solution to a real problem. And I was talking to the CEO, I'm like, so that is worth, I don't know, $50,000-$75,000 to me. Something in that range. What's the quote for? $480,000. Well, that's a $10 solution to a $5 problem. we're not talking that, you know, I'm at 75 and they're 100. And I'm like, here's them, here's me, right? And that doesn't mean that that would be a fantastic deal in some environments. In my environment, it's much, right? So I'm not mad about it. It's just like, I'm not paid to defend that environment. I'm paid to protect my company and my environment. So I have to make decisions for me and my environment. And all too often, I feel like we don't do that real basic analysis, right? Like, if your company, I make up straw mans to make a thought experiment work, right? Like, if you have zero MFA, which thankfully I don't think anyone has zero, right? But go with it for now. If you have zero MFA, but you're putting massive amounts of time and effort into like writing policies, I'm going to say you have misallocated resources. But how often, that's an extreme example, but how often do we do that? How often do we put a lot of time and effort into things that don't really move the needle all that much by looking at things that do move the needle a ton and be like, oh, that's not feasible.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, you can spend $10 to lock the door, or you can spend $100 trying to detect everything that comes through the door.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So, but I would say, like, in terms of like, as we near them towards the end of the, like, the conversation, some of that really to take back to like the CISO idea. And for, we always try and ask this question at the end, is that if somebody, like, you've got somebody is wanting to be a CISO, they're moving towards that as a job, if you had to give like three key tips to them in terms of what they're doing, I suppose it comes back to what we were talking about at the start, but what would be your the three key priorities that they should look for?
Sure. They're not easy. They're not easy, but they're very possible. And that would be to figure out how to enable yourself to not experience stress or anxiety over things that you do not control.
Yep.
Another is to align, be very clear about what type of CISO you want to be, what type of person you are, and whether that aligns with the expectations of the job or the company they are going after. Those are two very, very big ones. By the way, models of types of CISOs differ. There's anywhere from 3 to 7, depending on who you look at. I like the 5-person model or 5-type model. Risk 360 is the first people I saw articulate the model that I like. Other people do different models, but 3 to 7 types in there. So those are really two of the really big, the biggest ones. And I think the third would be to get some familiarity with sales. And by sales, I don't mean like, sales is not a dirty word for one thing. But,
I'm glad about that.
Yeah. But from a perspective of people respond to their incentives and empathy. I really, really like the book Freakonomics. It's an older book. about people responding to their incentives. I like that a lot. And empathy is just, empathy makes you an attractive human being. Honestly, it's a good life skill. It's like, you know, kindness works. Who knew? Relationships work. Who knew?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think those are my big ones. And those are not easy. Like, you might need a therapist to do that. But I think that is how you set yourself up for success as any executive, including CISO.
Yeah, and I think what you've just said there as well, I think that just with empathy alone, if you get that right, that integrity just sort of follows it hand in hand, doesn't it? And that builds the trust, and that builds the idea. Sorry, that's my cat walking across the screen. That builds that trust in people. That means that the job that you then go on to do is always going to be successful if you those points right.
Please say out loud, like, if you don't have fanatical levels of integrity, it shouldn't be a CISO. And like, just kind of call it, go do something else with your life. All right.
Yeah.
Integrity is required.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely. But I mean, I could talk to you all day, Brent, about the ins and outs and what we've done. But I really thank you for joining us today and really giving us a different insight actually from what normally is, and almost sometimes looking for the simple rather than the most like technology driven, but also just like you said, those key things of empathy, integrity, and belief. I think that's been fantastic. But no, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll get to talk again soon.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So thanks so much.